Are vampires old? They don't have to be old.
Well, they could be. I mean, at some point, they are not old. But
Blade wasn't old.
Pedantic vampire age argument, Frank Goldstein. Episode 75 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of BP Boston and the BP Fantasy Team, and I'm joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Good evening, guys. It is nice to have the band back together. Craig, I'm going to throw the first question out to you. Talk about the downgrade that you had to deal with last week when you subbed out me for Matt Collins.
I mean, I thought it was important to have a Boston member, although right. He's not actually in Boston anymore. But nevertheless, you know, he's representative.
Right.
But it was tough. There was not nearly enough making fun of me, is what I found.
I think that was definitely true, given what I was able to suffer through for that episode. Yeah. And now talk about the shift from Brett to JP and what that was like.
I mean, I think both very knowledgeable. I went after JP because he's going after his PhD, so I thought it would bring kind of like the academic to the table, which is kind of how I view Brett. I know he does not have one, as far as I know. He might, actually, I found out he had a brother like 3 years into our relationship. So, you know, who right. knows?
Yeah. And if you give Brett 3 weeks to do something, he might just go get a PhD. It's been a little while since we've been together. So,
yeah. So, so he doesn't. But I thought, you know, I thought I went after the people who embodied kind of what you guys brought to the table, but also would clearly be on my level as opposed to your levels.
Right. Did
he show up on time?
He showed up on time and had zero microphone issues. I had the microphone issues in honor of you.
I appreciate it.
So the most important, the biggest takeaway here is that if you had to rank all four of us, Matt Collins would be in last.
You know, I'm going to stay away from this because the honest truth was I really enjoyed Matt Collins, but...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But that might say more about me than anyone else.
Yeah, actually, that just reinforces everything I've always known about you.
So there you go.
Yeah. But the good news is, well, take good news with a grain of salt. The three of us are back. We know it's been quite a while. We had to cancel last minute a few times, and then last week Brett and I were both away, pretending to be on vacation. We were actually just hanging out together. Didn't want to tell Craig and hurt his feelings. But now the three of us are back for Tino once again. And so this episode we are going to go over some reader emails because it's been a little while since we've done so. And then we're going to talk about some injured players and some injured very notable players, I should say, and discuss how their injuries impact how we view them, you know, whether we think that this is going to be a big deal for them moving forward or whether we think it's just an injury, get over it, they'll be fine. It's a little obscure, but, you know, you should be used to that with the three of us back in the saddle. So we are going to start this week, like we used to start, Tino's, I don't know, 1 through 50, with reader emails. And our first reader email comes from Sam. Sam says, what the F? Why did I go with F? I forgot where I was. What the fuck is up with this guy? Choosing 1 to 2 keepers between Aaron Nola, Dylan Bundy, Blake Snell, and I'm assuming
Alex
Reyes. My first year to contend is next year, but more likely the 3 seasons following. I know Bundy has pedigree, but is he for real? So this man is very confused about Dylan Bundy, and to be fair to this man, Dylan Bundy is a confusing topic. So, Craig, we will throw it out to you. I mean, do you view Bundy as back with these other three sort of very highly thought of young arms?
Yeah, I think he's reasonably lumped in that group now that he's starting. I just pulled up his stats since he started starting, which was in, what, late July. And I have six games. He's got a 2.94 ERA, 34 strikeouts, 7 walks. So that's obviously really good. And, I mean, the bugaboo there is 5 home runs in those 6 starts. And, look, he's not the biggest pitcher in general, but so I think you're going to have plane issues there. And if his slider doesn't break as much, I think it's easy to elevate for a home run, especially in that ballpark or, you know, 4 out of the 5 AL East parks. So I don't know that home runs are necessarily going to go away, even if he is able to address some of those issues. I do think that he's someone who can be in this tier of pitchers. I mean, I the tough part for me is that Blake Snell is someone I've always really liked, and he's come out and been pretty much exactly what we thought he was, right? I mean, he's striking out 24% of batters he's faced right now. He's walking way too many guys. He's almost at 13%. But even with that, he's been really great at limiting home runs. His FIP is at 3.34. His ERA is at 3.06. So, I mean, he's been pretty much what we've expected, and I really believe in him and the stuff. I think Nola was kind of better than expected for a long while. He ended up with a 4.78 ERA before going on the DL. And so I think that's something to be concerned about. But that same concern applies to Bundy. And Reyes, he's up out of the bullpen. I think the issue for him is just that he's more of an unknown. But if I'm deciding between Bundy and Reyes at this point, I'm probably leaning Reyes. So overall, I'd probably put Bundy at the back end of this. Although if you want to put him ahead of Nola, just based on Nola's more recent injury as opposed to Bundy's more frequent injury history, I think that's okay. Ben, have you had a chance to see Bundy since he's transitioned to the starting rotation?
Only yesterday when he pitched against the Red Sox. And
that was his toughest start.
That was his toughest start, and I definitely saw flashes of the prospects, you know, that we all read about so much and saw when, a few years ago when he was able to stay on the mound. He had a few particularly nasty splitters, I think, maybe, if I'm remembering correctly, that I was fairly impressed by. But he also left some pretty spicy meatballs in the middle of the plate, including one that Sandy Leon, by the way, potential best catcher in baseball, Sandy Leon, did some very, very bad things to and almost hit the Utah street. So, you know, just one start, more of an anecdote than anything useful. But I would say that I left mildly encouraged, even though it was his roughest start, because I did at least see, you know, some of the raw material that we were so excited about a few years ago.
I mean, that's the interesting thing, right? Is that even in what's been his roughest start to date, like, there's still a decent amount to be encouraged by. So that's an interesting thing with him.
Yeah. So, Brett, you know, now that Bundy is in the majors and starting, does this do anything to sort of alleviate your injury concerns for Bundy, or are you just always going to consider him a bit of a ticking time bomb?
It's gradient. I mean, seeing him start like this, it alleviates a lot of the concern that he's going to be a long term reliever. I think this is clearly shown that he is much more likely to be a starter than I think most people would have thought at the beginning of 2016. As far as alleviating the injury concern, I'm not quite ready to go there. I think, you know, given all of his history and given the sort of troubles the organization has had getting the most of their young pitchers, I'm still pretty concerned about Bundy long term from an injury standpoint. But whereas the injury concern was about an 8 or a 9 before, maybe it's now a 6 or a 7. So still above what a normal, you know, 25-year-old pitcher with 20. Is he 24? 20? How old is he?
He's been around for a while. He's 23 and 9 months.
Yeah. So he's a little younger than I even thought. So yeah, I would say he's maybe one standard deviation more of a risk than a normal pitcher his age. But I, you know, as far going back to this group here, I would take Bundy over. I'd probably take Bundy over Nola just because I think Nola's more of a mid rotation guy, and I don't see the real step forward that he kind of showed glimpses of this year pre injury. I think Bundy has more of that, and with Nola being hurt right now, you know, there's certainly injury risk for him as well. I'd still take Reyes first of this group, and then back him with Snell before I got to the other two guys. Is that sort of where you guys are as well?
Yeah, I guess I give kind of the bottom of where I'd slot the four of them. I'd probably take Reyes over Snell, but it's really pretty close to me. I know I've always been the high guy on Snell, and I think there's obviously a little more immediate value. I think he's built to throw a full season next year, and I think Reyes probably can, but we don't know since they've already transitioned. He missed time this year due to the suspension, and now they've transitioned him to relief. So there's just a little more question in the short term. But yeah, I think long term, I think it's Reyes, Snell. I think I might go Bundy, Nola at this point. Nola was very good, but I think there's a chance he slides back and maybe is more of the ERA he was this year than the FIP.
I just absolutely love the fact that as Baltimore continues to contend, I think we could get a Dylan Bundy playoff start, which would be just super awesome as they try to win a pennant.
I think that'll really be a consolation to Ben if it's the Red Sox, if it's at the expense of the Red Sox.
Well, you know, I will ignore that jab about the Orioles defeating the Red Sox in the hunt for the pennant. Wink, wink. Oh, and speaking of pennants, now seems like a natural time to talk about our new sponsor, Pennant Wars. Pennant Wars is an online baseball management game where you call all the shots as GM of your own baseball franchise in its fictional universe. You can build a team that plays your brand of baseball by drafting and developing amateurs, spending big in the free agent market, and making blockbuster trades with other owners. You can set your lineup, rotations, bullpens, strategies, and customize your home stadium, elevate players as they progress and regress through their entire career arc, similar to Craig, make franchise-altering decisions as you try to balance your future and present needs, strategy, planning, or keys to success, and just like a real league. So this is an in-depth, realistic simulation engine, plays out 162 game seasons on a pitch-by-pitch basis. And the nice thing here is you can play out the entire season, including the preseason and the postseason, over the course of just 6 weeks. Holy shit, this is a long intro. I am only halfway through. Well, the other good thing about the Pennant Wars universe is that it is always on. It's never off. And you can check in and manage your team anywhere you have an internet connection, whether that be at home, on your phone, or even at work. And hopefully when you're playing Pennant Wars, your internet connection is stronger than mine is currently. Pennant Wars brings baseball sims into the 21st century. You had to hate baseball sims from the 18th century. Those were pretty rough. It's entirely web-based, mobile-friendly, and takes advantage of all the latest tech to offer the best possible user experience. So just in your mind, think of this user experience and then go all the way to the other end of the spectrum. That's what you get with Pennant Wars. The game is always evolving and growing. It's driven largely by feedback from players, and you'll always be playing the latest and greatest version, so it's basically the exact opposite of Pokemon Go. So join the fun and growing community of like-minded armchair general managers and people who write promos but use hyphens inconsistently as you all compete to build a baseball dynasty. Get your fantasy baseball fix year-round with Pennant Wars. By the time you start your first six-week season, I will be done reading this promo.
Standing ovation.
Ooh.
So let's move on to our second reader email.
I feel bad for the people who will learn to Craig. That's going to be tough.
It's not easy. It's not even recommended.
Yeah, but no, it's not for the faint of heart.
I would argue that I'm Craiging right now in my total refusal to.
You've had several years to learn, though.
It is true. And that, for those of you at home wondering why the audio sounds worse when I speak, other than the fact that my voice is grating, it's because I refuse to turn my AC off because it's very hot. And I would rather be comfortable than have you enjoy listening to this shitty podcast. Okay, so the second reader email this week comes from Matthew. Matthew says, "Hey there, love the site," but he's not even talking about BP. "Now that both players are up, who would you prefer to invest in for an OPS not average league? Gary Sanchez or Wilson Contreras?" So two pretty successful young up-and-coming catchers. Brett, binary choice here. Who do you prefer?
I am going to choose... it's really, really close. I am going to lean Sanchez very, very slightly. And it's close enough that the lean comes... Mostly due to situation. I think Sanchez is going to play more. I think there is more opportunity for him to get additional at bats in New York than Contreras does in Chicago, at least in the short term. And you know, I think Contreras obviously is a little bit more average, a little less power. I think Sanchez is a little bit more power, a little less average. So since this is an OPS league, I think that that tweaks it a little bit as well. So yeah, I would, if we had to do our 100 shares thing, I'd probably go 60 Sanchez and 40 Contreras, so it's pretty close. But I think they're both pretty exciting young catchers, and given the current group of catchers in the majors right now, with the exception of Sandy Leon, it's just a fucking mess. So, God bless these two. Ben.
I will flip that and go 60 Contreras, 40 Sanchez. If you're talking about OBP leagues, you know, Contreras has a pretty established for someone who's, you know, as recently a prospect as he is, an established history of being pretty patient and walking more than Sanchez has in the minors. You know, we are talking a dynasty league. I do think Contreras is a better bet to stick behind the plate for longer than Sanchez does. And I agree that Sanchez might have the bigger immediate impact because I think he has a clearer path to regular playing time, especially considering, you know, he can DH a little bit. There's a lot of buzz about the Yankees potentially trading Brian McCann this offseason. But I still like Contreras' overall game a little bit more in the long run. So also very close for me. I think they'd be ranked within maybe 10 slots of each other if I was putting together a prospect list right now. But I will give the slight edge to Contreras instead of Sanchez. And we will go to Craig for the tiebreaker.
I think I've been thinking about it the whole time you guys have been making cases, and I much prefer Contreras in real life, but I do think over the next year or two, I buy into Brett's case that there's just a lot of playing time available for Sanchez. I think, you know, he could even DH on days when he's not catching. And I think the counter argument to that is Contreras can obviously play outfield and move around when he is not catching for Chicago. But they just have so many pieces that I think it's reasonable to expect Sanchez to get more playing time. And when it comes to just pure offense, I think they're pretty evenly matched in terms of fantasy assets. I'd probably say like 55-45 in favor of Sanchez, but I'd much prefer Contreras in real life in terms of just pure value.
Yeah, I forget where I saw this. Someone posted it on Twitter, but it was pretty amusing. It was did you guys see the first 50? At bats of Gary Sanchez's career versus first 50 at bats of Jesus Montero's career.
Oh no!
No.
First, Gary Sanchez threw 52 at bats, is hitting .346, .382, .692. Jesus Montero threw his first 52 at bats, .346, .414, .635.
Oh God! Brett, is this your next hill to die on?
No, this is not my next hill to die on.
Okay.
I just found that interesting.
Oh, it's not too late for Jesus Montero.
It's never too late.
Hey, man, Sandy Leon's breaking out at 27.
Do you know how old Jesus Montero is?
At this point, 25?
Yeah, I would guess 25.
He's 26. But still.
Well, I'm telling you, this year, at this time last year, Sandy Leon was just 26-year-old, just dicking around the minors.
It's true.
That is absolutely true.
Calling Jesus Montero to Boston?
We don't need him. We have Sandy Leon. Why would we need him?
Well, just, you know, depth.
No, Sandy Leon is going to DH and catch next year. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. TBH. All right. Our next question does not feature any catchers, I believe. And this is a long one, although nowhere near as long as that promo. This question is from Paul. Paul says, recently I've turned my attention to high-performing minor leaguers who are neither top prospects nor well-known names. I know enough to skip over the hitters that are too old for their leagues, 29-year-old in AA hitting .325, for example. My problem is I found Mookie Betts a number of years ago by looking at high batting average, high OBP, and lower K guys who were of an appropriate age for their levels, and now I am determined to find more. I'm scanning the minor league stats, and I look at a few names and can't figure out how there is little to no excitement about these guys. Any comments you can make about these players would be great, and please talk about the overall strategy of picking up guys who fit this description. Alex Dickerson, who's a 26-year-old in AAA. Becerra, who's a 21-year-old in High A. Lamonte Wade, who is 20. Lamont? Oh, come on. Then why have the
I think there? No, it might be Lamonte. I don't remember.
It's Lamonte. Wade, who is 22 in low A. Ryan Healy, who we've talked about a little bit. He's 24, and now he's in the majors, I think, or maybe he's back in AAA. Craig's boy, Jorge Bonifacio, who's 23. And Nick Delmonico. What a name drop. Holy shit. I have not thought about Nick Delmonico in a minute.
To be fair, it's not far from Alex Dickerson.
But I've at least like heard his name bandied about. Nick Delmonico is, wow. Yeah,
that's fair.
Let's get some Billy Rowell up in here. all of these guys are batting well over .300 and have OBP is approaching .400 or better. Why shouldn't I clear some space of the Anthony Alfords and Forrest Walls of the world who are struggling to add guys with the production that they're putting up? This is from Paul. So, Craig, what do you make of some of these players individually? You don't have to go through all of them, but, you know, one or two who you do like, if anybody. And then we'll have Brett speak about the overall strategy.
Yeah, I mean, so I should also point out this email, we went digging through the archives. It's from June. So we've obviously talked about Ryan Healy and his poorly spelled first name.
It's from June?
Yeah.
That's the most Tino thing ever.
Yeah. So we've talked about Healy before. I mean, Bonifacio, I've talked about a ton, obviously, and I think he's having a great year. I mean, I don't think he's not getting attention. He had two pretty bad years, or last year was especially bad, I think, but he had two pretty bad years. And so, I mean, that's the case with a lot of these guys. Like, Delmonico was a top five round draft pick, and he was highly thought of briefly, and he struggled for an extended period of time and then wasn't so highly thought of. And that's why you don't get the buzz on these guys. I think in terms of your approach of high batting average, high OBP, lower strikeout guys, you're ignoring slugging. And that's part of the problem. I mean, Wade is he was a good college player on University of Maryland, and he was an interesting guy. I think he was a ninth round pick. And he's in low A at 22. I mean, that's what you said, like you brought up the age in the email, but you know, this is not 22 in low A is not that far afield from 29-year-old in double A. So it obviously depends on the player, how raw they are, stuff like that. But Wade is a pretty polished guy, a 4-year guy at Maryland. And so for him to be beating up on lower minors arms is not particularly impressive. And on top of that, he's just not that interesting of a fantasy player. He's got some speed, but he's going to need to hit for average and run to really have value. I mean, Dickerson's 26. That's the reason. He has 7 homers this year, but he's just not very good. That's Becerra is interesting. He's completely devoid of power at this point. He's kind of had a shoulder injury, which might be playing into that he's been playing through. But he was actually off to a pretty good start, and I think people know who he is. He was in the Syndergaard trade, and he's an interesting guy. I think that covered everyone. Brett, do you have a caveat to kind of what I was saying, or another take on these?
I don't really have much more of a player specific take. I want to talk about sort of the overarching theme here.
Yeah.
I understand wanting to try to find a way to repeat something that works when you find something that works. But this is insane. just because you found one player like this who worked out does not mean that this is the magic trick to finding great prospects. Great prospects come in all different shapes and sizes and profiles. And if there was a magic bullet to figuring out which prospects would succeed at the major league level, major league teams would have figured it out 40 years ago. But they haven't.
Well, except for the Diamondbacks.
except for the Diamondbacks. I'm trying to think of a good example. It's like trying to put together a investment portfolio and say, this municipal bond was just fucking awesome for me. I'm going to invest all in municipal bonds. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh shit, I have municipal bonds. This sucks. Yeah, there's no point in doing this. This is just kind of crazy. But yeah.
Or it's like trying to make an analogy on a podcast, but everyone's like, what the fuck is a municipal bond? And then you just keep trying to make analogies and it doesn't work. It's just crazy.
I now feel a lot of pressure to have a PhD.
Yeah, well, that's fair. I think the bigger problem is like, okay, so you found Mookie Betts, but there are guys in that vein, but they're fewer and farther between because for a reason. And that's because there are a lot of guys who look like them or may seem like them on the stat page that are not those guys. I mean, again, I go back to power. Mookie Betts hit for power every step of the way. So, you know, that matters too. And when you're comparing, you know, Anthony Alford or Forrest Walls of the world, I mean, those are very toolsy guys, and there's a reason that people look at the scouting reports and why we talk about not just scouting the stat line. I think, you know, on some level, scouting the stat line gets derided a little too much. It's a fine first filter, but you need to go deeper, and you need to look into what people who are watching these guys and looking at these guys and people who have a history of doing those things say about them, whether they're raw in terms of a pitch recognition sense and they think that they can get better. Like, do they see flashes of identifying pitches or laying off breaking stuff, or are they hopeless in that sense? It's again, it's fine as a filter and say, okay, let me dig into these guys who came up under these parameters. But the reason that Forrest Wall and Anthony Alford matter is because we know what Anthony Alford's speed is, and we know that Forrest Wall has been, you know, someone who had a very high hit tool from a very rare position, or from a position that has a lot of value if you can hit at it, and is going to play in cores if he stays in his organization. I mean, there are reasons that those guys get attention, and there are reasons that these other guys don't. And certainly there are, you know, I like Bonifacio. I think Healy is minorly interesting. I think Becerra could be really interesting if he can get healthy and hit for power again. So those are half the names you mentioned. But again, you got to dig into the reasons why.
No, and the other thing is, if you're going to look at stats as a first filter, which is as Craig said, is absolutely fine. Just go for more exciting stats. I mean, look at it doesn't even have to be guys that are well known. I mean, you look at someone like Greg Allen, who is someone who has a good approach, is hitting for average, and steals bases. So that's a thing. That's a thing that helps. You know, maybe he turns into nothing, but maybe his approach works as he keeps moving up, and he can steal 30 to 40 bases at the major league level. But that at least target something more interesting than high average, high OBP in the minors. I mean, minor league pitching is, we could spend a whole podcast on why. On why that doesn't mean as much as you think it means, but we won't go there now. I won't go there now.
And fielding, which often gets, you know, it's hits that guys aren't getting to, so they're not errors, but they are, you know, there are a lot of inflated averages and inflated OBPs because, you know, telling the difference between a high A, you know, having a high A pitcher throw balls versus having you know, a triple A or a major league pitcher throw balls, you know, that are closer to the zone or intended to elicit swings and misses, stuff like that. Those all factor in, as do, you know, home parks. I mean, we've talked about Dylan Cousins and Reese Hoskins, and, you know, Reading is a great hitter's park depending on your profile. So, you know, you need to take those things into account too when you're looking at stats, which again is a fine, absolutely reasonable first step.
All right. Our last question of the night is from Brian, and it ties in very well to the subject that we will cover after the break. But before we get ahead of ourselves, let's answer this specific question from Brian, which is about AJ Pollock. And he asks, I'm wondering where you think AJ Pollock will rank on the top 500 Dynasty Keepers list headed into 2017. Pollock is available in my league right now as a free agent. My league keeps 6 players per team, and I'm not locked in on most of my selections yet. After my 2 locks, Kershaw and Bryant, I have to choose between 4 of Cespedes, Polanco, Carrasco, Cole, Lucroy, Bruce, Hosmer, Ozuna, Abreu. Who would you keep in your top 6, and would you add Pollock now and insert him over any of those other 4 guys? Bryant. So, Brett, for all list-related questions, we turn to you first. Where are you ranking Pollock ballpark heading into next year?
I'd say ballpark, he'll probably be in the, assuming he is going into spring training without any clear injury restrictions, I'd say he's probably going to be around 40, about 40. Yeah.
Well, as far as he could be back this year, I think he could be back within the next 10 days or so.
He could be, and some of the answers.
And that,
to
that can
question,
change the calculus. Yeah.
Yeah. So as far as I'll break them into 2 different sections. You can't answer the second question until you answer the first question. The first question is, would you add him now? Absolutely, you would add him now. I think AJ Pollock should be owned in pretty much every league where you have a fungible roster spot, you know, on the off chance he does come back. If he's back September 1st and playing in Arizona, then I mean he's a starter in every league, every format. As far as going to the point where would he be one of those top 6 keepers, I would not want to answer that question until I saw him come back. I think if he doesn't play at all this year, I think he's probably, he's either just on the outside looking in, or he's like number 6. If he does, and at least looks, at least get some reps, looks half decent, I think he'd pretty comfortably be in that top 6. Ben, what about you?
I don't know if I would go comfortably, but that might be because I have a Gregory Polanco problem. I don't know. Well, I mean, obviously, I'd keep him over Bruce.
Well, I would. Polanco would be one of the 6.
Yeah, yeah.
For me,
who are your 6, Ben? Before factoring Pollock in, just like don't even think about Pollock, and then.
Kershaw, Bryant, Polanco, probably Cespedes over Pollock at this point. And that's when it gets a little closer. I still think I would Let me make sure I'm not missing anything major with his stats. I still like Jose Abreu.
He's had a real bad year.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he has.
I mean, I think the obvious four to me are Kershaw, Bryant, Polanco, and Luke Roy.
I don't think Luke Roy is more obvious than Cespedes, do you? Well, I guess you do because you just said so.
Yeah, I do. For health reasons, I don't know where he'll be, and it's just catcher versus outfield to me. But Cespedes is probably the next name right there.
Yeah, so. and for me, Luke Roy is probably the next name. So
that's
honestly, some of that depends on how many teams the league is. Because if it's a one catcher league with you know like 12 teams, I mean this is assuming this is a pretty good roster. It seems reasonable that it's a 12-team or a 14-team league, in which case, you know, catcher stinks, but there's at least more available then.
Yeah, I mean, there's more available, but I think there's a pretty marked drop-off between the top three of Posey, Leon, and Luke Roy.
That's the right order, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Luke Roy in Texas is obvious. I mean, Milwaukee was a great place to hit, but in that lineup, I think he has a chance to really produce, and they can work him in at DH or first base, which he's played before. It's, you know, so I don't think it's a given that he's like only a 120, 130 game catcher. So I have a love affair with Luke Roy. That's fine if I'm higher on him.
Luke Roy would be one of my six. Okay. I was just throwing that out there.
Just really quick. So, Brett, who are your six?
I'm going to go kind of opposite and just eliminate people because I can't read very well. I'm definitely not keeping a pitcher.
Okay.
So Carrasco and Cole can get struck right away. I'm not keeping Bruce. I'm not keeping Abreu.
Okay.
So that leaves
Cespedes. You are keeping a pitcher. You're keeping Kershaw, though.
Well, yes. Kershaw is not a pitcher. Kershaw is Kershaw.
Right, okay.
Cespedes, Polanco. I think it would be Cespedes, Polanco, Luke Roy, and Hosmer.
Mm-hmm. So you're taking Hosmer over Ozuna. Are you taking Pollock over Hosmer? Yes or no?
I might be. If I might take Pollock over Hosmer. Yeah.
Okay. If he comes back and looks good, you're taking him over Hosmer. Ben, who are your six?
What Brett said, but Hosmer over Pollock.
Okay.
Especially already keeping three outfielders.
Okay. And that's right. And part of it would depend on kind of how many outfielders you mm-hmm. use and how deep the league is. And that's fair. I think I'm at this point the high guy on Pollock. I would keep Kershaw, Bryant, Cespedes, Polanco, Luke Roy, and Pollock. Is that six?
Yeah. That's what Brett said.
Those are the ones I'd pick. Yeah. I'd keep Pollock. And I don't think he's frankly that far from Cespedes in terms of value. And I understand that's being really high on him. Again, I'd go back to the two seasons he was healthy. He was easily more valuable than Cespedes was, you know, the last couple of years. And I think it's easy to kind of discount that or assume he won't get there. But he has the kind of talent to be far and away more valuable in a fantasy sense just because of the stolen bases. And, I'm assuming that a messed up elbow isn't going to stop him from stealing bases.
I mean, he's really only had one elite year, though. 2014 was good, but not staggering. It was 2015 that was the holy crap year. 2014, he hit 7 home runs and 14 steals.
Yeah, but wasn't it in...
It was only in 75 games.
It was indeed in 75 games, because that's how... But, I mean, he's had trouble staying healthy his whole career.
Yeah, and that's fair. I mean, I think those same injury was applied to Cespedes, and that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I think they're close to each other. I don't think just as a really. I know we've gone long on this, but as a side thing, I was asked recently, about someone keeping Hosmer or Ozuna, and I went Hosmer. Am I alone in that? I just thought it was interesting. Both guys were on this.
No, I really like both, but I would lean Hosmer over Ozuna.
Same.
Okay. And this, the caveat being we've all loved Hosmer for a very long time. Yes. But I was
we're
just curious.
Still, we're still, I'm actually wearing my Hosmer jersey right now. I really am.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. So I think, you know, we've all kind of said we're all keeping essentially the same guys with either Hosmer or Pollock. So,
yeah, and I think the only factor we haven't mentioned that you have to consider is if you have a Singer slot, you might want to pick Enya over Hosmer over Pollock. But I know those leagues aren't super popular yet.
Weird fucking formats, man.
Welcome back to episode 75 of Tino. I hope you use that break to look up Pennant Wars. And speaking of Pennant Wars, no, I'm just kidding. I won't do that to you. Okay, so we are going to continue along a similar train of thought as we just discussed with AJ Pollock. We have seven star-level players, or I guess six star-level players and one Blake Swihart, players who have suffered serious injuries this year, either right now or are recovering from those injuries. And we're just going to talk about their fantasy value, you know, whether or not we think these injuries are just bumps in the road or something more significant that's really hindering their fantasy value. So what we're going to do is make up a threat level for each individual player and then talk a little bit about whether or not, you know, we think this is going to have a dramatic impact on where they will rank headed into 2017. And the first player we are going to talk about, oddly enough, is Giancarlo Stanton. A pretty disappointing year overall, staying at 244, 329, 496. He did still hit 25 home runs because he's Giancarlo Stanton, but he is now out for the rest of the season with a groin strain. A pretty alarming pattern with him. He has now only played more than 140 games once in the past five seasons. So, Craig, what is your current Giancarlo Stanton threat level?
My current Giancarlo Stanton threat level is threat level brown note.
Threat level brown note?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound good.
No,
talk to us a little bit about what brown note means and how you feel about Stanton.
Well, the brown note is the note that you play that makes everyone shit their pants.
Noted.
Are you not aware of that? The brown note's a known thing on the internet, at least.
Well, I don't know
if you spend any time there.
The internet?
Yeah.
More than some, less than you.
Fair enough. I think I am. I mean, at some point, I think you have to downgrade Stanton. I know we already bake in a decent amount of missed games with him, but I think on some level you have to start upping that number of missed games. And I think at age, you know, he's going to be 27 next year. Again, he'll have one season over 145 or 145 or more in the last five. Like you said, I think you can expect 25 or so homers even in limited time, which he's done the last several years. But I think expecting 30 plus is expecting too much.
Fair enough. Brett, any other Stanton thoughts?
I'm not really down on Stanton much. I think I think that's right. I think the injury risk that was already baked in with Stanton, I think, is just coming to pass. And he started out the season really rough, but actually, if you he was hitting the ball really well the last like month and a half before he got hurt. This is a sample size that is absolutely meaningless because it's not random and because it was bookended by two really good games. But in the last 48 games of his season, he was hitting .299, .361, .582 with a 25% strikeout rate. That's good Stanton, I think. Not as much power as I think would be expected, given his supreme power. But it's good Stanton. I still think good Stanton shows up when he's healthy. I think he's good for about 120 games a year.
That seems a little optimistic at this point. But I guess not, because he's still so young. Anyway, it's not my turn to answer. And instead, we're gonna go to Carlos Gomez, who, if you think Stanton had a bad year, Gomez is at 210, 272, 322 with 5 homers and 13 steals. He suffered through hand injury, rib injury, I think even more than that. So I think Gomez is older than people realize. He is 30 and will turn 31 this offseason. So, Brett, what is your current danger level with Gomez?
Probably Trump advisors at a bar mitzvah. I think I'm concerned that Gomez is just kind of done. Not like done, like he won't be a major leaguer, but just done as a fantasy player that matters in all leagues. It's been now 2 years in a row of pretty below average performance. I mean, he was okay in Milwaukee, and then as soon as he got traded to Houston, the batting average and on base dipped, and you know, the power has not really been there. I mean, he hit 24 homers in 2013, 23 homers in 2014, and 17 homers in the 2 years since. Even the stolen bases haven't been there. He stole 17 in 2015, 13 this year. It's
just worth noting that, I mean, injuries play into those, right? I mean, he only had 115 games last year, and he had a hip issue, which would presumably affect his running, stuff like that.
Yeah. No, yeah. There is, but I guess the other piece of that is I don't think that part is going to get much better either.
For sure. For sure.
So if you're just, yeah. So yes, you can certainly blame some of it on the injury, but then he just becomes more of an injury risk. So good times all around. Ben.
Nope. I think your threat level is appropriate, and I will be happy to spend a late round pick on him if everybody else stays away. But, you know, for dynasty purposes, not someone I am even remotely interested in investing in. Craig?
No, I think that's about right.
So now let's move on to a fairly interesting case. Clayton Kershaw, who, even by Clayton Kershaw standards, is having an absurd season. 1.79 ERA, 121 innings. He has 145 strikeouts and 9 walks. Just disgustingly good. But he has been on the DL for quite a while with a back strain now. How long has it been, Craig? Like 6 weeks?
Yeah, about that.
Yeah.
He's throwing again, but that's about it.
Right. And it says he is perhaps going to be back by the end of the month.
Yeah, I mean, if he can get up to speed, that's about right. He still, despite starting only 16 games, has, if you want to go by WAR, he has more FWAR than anyone else by half a win still. Any other pitcher, I should say.
So he's 28, and I'm going to answer this one. And my Kershaw threat level is, is my phone in my pocket? Subconscious hand check. The answer is always yes. Your phone is always in your. There's nothing to be worried about. Kershaw is totally fine, and I think there are some players who have passed him in terms of, is he still a top three keeper? I don't know, but I do think he's still a top 10 keeper. But discussions before this episode began recording tell me that you guys may feel differently. So Craig, lead us into an interesting and lively Kershaw debate.
Well, I mean, I think the question is obviously not whether he's good, but he heretofore been an Iron Man. You could count on him for 200, not only incredible innings, but like an absurd amount of incredible innings. He was not, as Brett kind of said it when we were talking about it before, he was not merely like the best pitcher. He was also one of the best fantasy players. And I guess the question is, and I think it's a reasonable one if someone asked it, is whether he's maintained that status. And I think the caveat can easily be yes when he's healthy, but the question is, do we have the same confidence that he'll be healthy starting 2017 on? I mean, like, I Brett, where was he in your top 500 entering the season?
Entering the season, I think he was 5 or 6.
Okay, so if he's, let's say he's a top 6 player, I would presume, I frankly would probably knock him out of that spot going forward just on health, because it had never been an issue before, and now it might be. I mean, it's a back issue too. It's not like those are necessarily easily resolved, or they're usually something you have to keep monitoring and stuff like that. So
Yeah, I had him at six at the beginning of the season. I bumped him up to three in the midseason update
because he had
before he was hurt and when he was just a machine. But yeah, I mean that, the just for reference, I mean the next pitcher after him was at 17, and even that might be generous at this point. I might have him outside the top. I might have him outside the top 10 at this point. He's certainly the number one pitcher in dynasty leagues. That is not changing. But yeah, I mean there is a certain human element that Kershaw just honestly did not have for a long time, and now it's there. So I think you have to. I think you have to go back to ranking him like the best dynasty starting pitcher around, rather than the guy who gets ranked among where the best dynasty hitters are ranked.
I guess just why? I mean, this seems like a random injury that just popped up. Like it's, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being hot.
I mean, he was the guy who didn't have those. I mean, that's. I think it's really just the presence of a thing that was at up to this point never present.
Isn't this also his second back injury now?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that's right. He did miss. He missed time and then came back and was better than than ever. When they started the year in Australia, he had like a back slash oblique thing. It was his back though. Yeah, but this is a different area.
Yeah.
But then again, that's not really more comforting. Now you've got two back injuries over the last few years. So
no, I would say that makes it less I mean, if he ran off the mound and like tripped on something and like sprained his ankle, I feel like that, I don't know. Would that make him a better bet long term?
I don't know.
I realized I didn't know how to answer that. Maybe?
I'd just like to point out that I'm playing through a pretty serious back injury right now, and I don't think it has any long-term ill effects on me.
Well, there's only so far to go.
Damn. I'm not owned online. Okay. From one disappointing pitcher, not disappointing pitcher, to a disappointing pitcher and to better transitions in the years to come. Matt Harvey. Not great, Brett. Not great. 92 innings this year, 4.86 ERA, dramatically decreased K per nine and increased BB per nine. And, of course, recently had surgery for thoracic outlet syndrome, which is not great when you're a pitcher. So what is your current threat level with Matt Harvey?
My current threat level with Harvey is shaken up soda. I think, he's a...
just have to tap him on the head a lot before you open him?
Yeah, I think that right now there is, obviously no one's going to want to open the bottle of soda right now. It's shaken up. You're going to get wet with soda, and that's disgusting.
Thank you for qualifying what I'll get wet with.
Yeah. But I feel like if you could buy a regular 2-liter bottle of soda for $2, and someone had a fully shaken up 2-liter bottle of soda that they wanted to drink right now but thought that they could not, they might sell it to you for 30 cents. And
this is worse than the municipal bond metaphor.
What sort of illegal soda transactions are you undergoing? Dad, please stop buying 30-cent used sodas from people.
But it's such a good deal. It's that's a really stupid way of saying that I'm buying Matt Harvey right now where I can because the price is really cheap, and I think I think given his makeup and given his personality and his stuff, I think there's a decent chance he can come back from this and be a very good starter. I think the days of him being an ace are, I think, over. But I'm not closing the book on his high end career at this point.
I like that you've opted to choose his makeup as a positive factor when before the season he got in trouble because he refused to pee enough.
Yeah, he's got a lot of time to pee now.
What happens when you drink too many of those 30-cent seltzers? The stuff gets backed up, you know?
It does.
Don't I know it?
You drink it too fast because the carbonation's gone once you open it, and then you're just fucked.
Wait, why would you drink it quickly if the carbonation was gone?
Well, carbonation naturally slows you down while you're drinking something.
But why would you just not drink it?
Well, it depends how...
You spent 30 cents on it. You gotta drink it. Otherwise, that's a sunk cost.
That's true. That's why I'm keeping Prince Fielder in my goddamn DL slot in TDGX.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Should have given Matt Harvey the threat level Prince Fielder.
No, that's not happening.
Then we would have missed that sparkling soda analogy. Nailed it.
God damn it.
Okay, and now for the transition I meant to make last time, from one disappointing pitcher to another, let's talk a little bit about Sonny Gray, who has been either hurt or bad for the entirety of 2016. In 116 innings, he has an ERA pushing on six, which is not what you want. 93 strikeouts and 42 walks during that time. So strikeouts are about level with the past 2 years, but everything else is substantially, substantially worse, including his home run per nine rate. I'm trying to remember exactly what he's been injured with this year. It was a trap, right? Yes, it was a trap earlier this year. I don't know. And right now it's a back.
And many hurt feelings.
Yes. Well, of course, that's a Sonny Gray special. So he's only 26. He'll turn 27 this offseason. And this is really the first sign of trouble he's had at any point in his career. Craig, what is your threat level for Sonny Gray?
My threat level is Ryan Lochte in Rio.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Wow.
As you said, it's been bad. It's either bad, which not performing well, or causing a bit of a problem. You know, just yeah. That's as far as I'm going to strain this metaphor.
Yeah, that's much more timely than my threat level would have been.
The municipal bonds or soda?
No.
No, his new one, I guess. Yes. Brett's probably cooking up something from the 19, from some other Olympics, maybe the ones in Germany or something.
Yeah, Brett's got a real hard-hitting Munich analogy waiting in.
I am legitimately concerned. I mean, everything has gone backwards. Again, the strikeout rate not as much as the previous 2 years, but this was a guy who, in terms of fantasy, didn't have a ton of room to drop his strikeout rate to still be among the elite pitchers. You know, I get that the ERA was there and the innings were there the past 2 years, but a 20% strikeout rate just isn't that impressive in fantasy anymore. I mean, just when you're looking at rate stats and how high some other guys push their strikeout rate, I think you can cobble together seasons that are comparable compared to a guy throwing this many innings at that. I mean, it's not a low rate, but it's just not especially distinguishing. And so for him to drop into the 18% range is scary. And just the fact that his home run per fly ball rate has almost doubled. I think that, you know, he was someone who people weren't sure about. The reason he dropped in the draft to 18th in 2011 was that his height, and they weren't sure he could be a starting pitcher. I think he's obviously proved them wrong in that sense. But, you know, the question was, would he give up too many home runs? What happens if he's not getting, you know, if he's not doing exactly what he needs to do? Does he have the wiggle room to get around it? He's still getting a ton of ground balls, But the fly balls he is giving up are going for home runs, and he pitches in a great park to avoid that in general. But that being said, he was at 0.74 homer per nine in 2015. He's at almost double that, 1.4 in 2016. If he's a one homer per nine guy, I just don't think he's like. I think he's just kind of a generic fantasy pitcher. Is that a hot take?
I don't think that's a hot take. Also, Ben, how did you know that one of the things I was thinking of had to do with Germany?
I said that.
You said that. How did you know that?
I learn new things about you every day, but I do know you.
Nothing has ever bothered Craig more than learning this late that you have a brother. He brings it up every other day now. I don't feel like any of us speak about any of our respective siblings that often.
But I know that they exist.
What's my brother's name?
I don't know your brother's name. I knew he existed.
I don't have a brother.
Nailed.
I really don't. I do have a sister.
A younger sister. Nailed it.
A much younger sister.
See?
Good, I know. Good work. You also have a sister. Boom. Destroyed.
Yeah.
Yep. Her name is Craig.
You should have a brother named Karsten.
I have a brother.
Karsten Goldstein?
No.
No, you.
Craig.
All right, I'm
Karsten
done.
Karsley. Okay, well, we really... George, you're going to have to fix that.
No, I knew what he was going for. I was just being obstinate. We only have
you
two of these.
Never.
Yeah, well, we only have two of these left. I'm pretty sure we can. Yeah, sorry, George. Doesn't get any better. George just Skype chatted Jesus Christ, which I'm pretty sure at this point you shouldn't believe in anymore. We only have two of these guys left. Shall we power through?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, speaking of people Jesus has abandoned, Adam Wainwright, soon to be 35, ERA of 4.72. He has only struck out 114 batters and walked 40 batters in 145 innings. So we just went. We'll go back to Brett. Brett, what is your Wainwright threat level?
I would say Vampire Before Dawn.
That's how far back we have to go now? We're into vampire references.
Yeah, my other ones were better. I'm now thrown off. It's not even valid. I like Wainwright. I actually think he'll have a bit of a bounce back year next year, but he has not been good. But he's getting old, so hence the vampire reference. This sucks.
Are vampires old? They don't have to be old.
Well, they could be. I mean, at some point they are not old, but.
Blade wasn't old.
Pedantic vampire age arguing, Craig Goldstein.
Adam Wainwright's his walk rate out. His walk rate's up. His strikeout rate's down. He's not really giving up more home runs, which is at least a positive. But I could see him. Yeah, his FIP is also 3.5 compared to 4.72 ERA. So I could absolutely see drafting him next year as a passable SP3 and trying to or possibly 4 depending on size of the league, and just hoping you kind of get a 3.5 ERA out of him, a bunch of innings and wins, and maybe 160, 150, 160 strikeouts. But peak Wainwright is over, which makes me sad because peak Wainwright is one of my favorite pitchers to watch in baseball.
I don't think I ever have owned Adam Wainwright in any league.
That's unfortunate.
This is not analysis. I just, I don't recall ever owning him. And at this point I will never make it a point to own him because yeah, he's a Cardinal. I'm sure like he'll throw together at some point one more pretty solid year, but I don't know if we'll be able to predict when that happens, and I'm never going to be willing to pay name value. Craig?
I have nothing enlightening to say about Adam Wainwright. I don't think I'm as high as Brett is on him, but I think he'll be generically fine next year. Like, I don't think he's going to be... I wouldn't go targeting him, but he will be a viable, you know, middle rotation option for a fantasy rotation.
Shall we mercifully bring this podcast to an end with our last player?
Can we?
Yes. All right. And last and certainly least, we have Blake Swihart, who was never really given a fair shot to produce any value this season. He was unceremoniously dumped to AAA so that Christian Vasquez could do absolutely nothing. Then he was transitioned to an outfielder, which is what I would call a misuse of resources, but this is not the BP Boston podcast, so we won't get into it here. Then he was called back up to the majors, really hurt his ankle playing the outfield, and eventually needed surgery on it. So he is done for the year. And whether or not he is a catcher long-term now is sort of up in the air. So real quick, we will just go around the table and give our lightning round threat levels with Blake Swihart. For me, it is getting drunk with the in-laws because... you know, it's probably a good idea to stop this, but then again, you're already so far in, and you got to just sort of roll the dice. Craig?
Yeah, I'm going to go with threat level coconut crab.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think there is obviously the opportunity for, you know, exciting things to happen, but it could go horribly wrong. It's best to have a halberd on hand, and, you know, if something... something goes badly, just remember to tickle Blake Swihart. Brett?
That leaves me then.
Yeah.
I will go with threat level Enya.
Welcome back to episode 75 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. Please rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever other app you're using to listen to this podcast. The reviews have been helpful, but they've also slowed a bit as of late, which may or may not have something to do with us not really recording for the last month. But anyway, we'd much rather blame you than just get our act together. So every single review you leave helps, and we do read and appreciate them. If you are interested in meeting some members of the BP staff in person, we strongly recommend going to Baseball Prospectus Night at Miller Park on August 27th. Go to bp.com and look at the big banner right at the very top of the website to learn more details and meet BP personalities such as JP Breen, Matthew Trueblood, Harry and his last name, and many other famous BP authors who you are very, very fond of.
I'm pretty sure it's Gallo.
Harry Gallo usually is. Speaking of awkward Latin pronunciations, Mao is back. Mauricio Rubio is once again a member of the BP family. He will not be rejoining Tino on a regular basis because it was even more of a shit show when there were four of us, but I'm sure we'll have him on again at some point, and you'll at least be seeing him around the site more often. So give Mao a follow if you unfollowed him after you left BP because you are a good and loyal leader. Give him a follow at mrubio52, I think. Yes, mrubio52.
Yeah,
see, Mao, I would never forget you. All right, and as for the rest of us, you can follow this podcast on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett on Twitter at Dynasty Guru. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in...
corncob denier, because I'm not owned.
Oh, God. You can follow our producer, George, on Twitter at George Bissell. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening, and have a good night.
That should have been CD for come on, dude.
What? I panicked.
All right, we're done.
Ben was so happy when we started podcasting to be back together, and now he's upset.
That's usually how spending an hour and a half with you goes.
Yeah, that's true. Someone said this about someone else, but I think it applies to me, that they said, this person is a lot like pancakes, which is that you're really happy when you get pancakes, and by the time you're done eating pancakes, you never want to have pancakes again.
This is why I visit you once a year.
Yeah, exactly.
Threat level pancake.
Yeah, exactly.
Level pancakes.